This is a Main Hustle Media podcast.
It sounds like one of the names they would have for a monarch. It's like Queen Javia the First, Black Radical Queer, Queer Negro Women.
All the way from the A, you listen to my favorite lesbian on BRQ.
Hey, stay locked in with your favorite lesbian on Black Radical Queer. Yeah.
Hey y'all, this is Javia Nicole, aka your favorite lesbian, and you're listening to Black Radical Queer Podcast, our stories on our own terms.
Hey y'all, this is Javia Nicole. Welcome back to another episode of Black Radical Queer Podcast. Today I am glad to have Ray on with me, and instead of me basically telling her business, I'll let her introduce herself and let you all know how she came across the podcast and that type of thing. I got a message from her that I thought was really dope. And so I think you all already know that the main reason that I do the podcast is because I want for different Black queer folks to be able to share their stories. And so when I get messages from you all, I'm always like, hey, look, like, do you want to share your story? Because it's not about me, it's about all of us being able to share our experiences and finding that common ground. So I'll go ahead and allow her to introduce herself, and then we'll get into our conversation.
Hi, everyone. My name is Ray. I am a queer woman. I'm 24 years old, from NYC, born and bred. I work at a sexual and reproductive health care center, and I also write. I'm an avid reader and a major fan of Black Radical Queer.
So how did you even come across the podcast in the first place?
I was on Apple Podcasts, and I was kind of searching for, like, tag words that meet my interest. So, like, I was looking for Black, I was looking for queer, and then I had typed in one of those words, and while I was scrolling, I had come across your podcast, and I was looking at the artwork first, and I was like, oh, the artwork is really dope. And then I had kind of read the introduction, or like description rather, of the podcast, and I was like, wow, this sounds like right along the lines of like what I need in my life right now. And the first episode that I actually listened to was Lesbian Sex Pamphlet, and my mind was blown, and I've been hooked ever since.
It's so funny that was the first episode, because that particular guest is one of my favorite people. And you said that you work at like a sexual health like center or organization or something like that?
Yeah, it's a sexual reproductive health organization.
The guest who I had on for that episode does a lot of work in sexual health, and it's like one of the things that we've bonded over and stuff like that. We have known each other for a while, but I just think it's interesting that was the first episode that you came across. And the logo like that I use is, it's so random because I was trying to figure out a logo for the show. I had something different in mind, and I started out using that one. It was going to be a temporary thing because it's my face. And I was like, that wasn't my intention to use it. But once I got feedback on it, I was like, okay, forget it. It's just something that I did myself, but it wasn't even the intent to use that. But, yeah, so I think, I'm glad that was an episode that you were able to come across, and it's pretty relevant to, at least on the surface, I would think, to the type of work that you do. So that's dope too. So I guess for my listeners, I want for them to be able to get to know a little bit more about you. So what type of like work do you do? Like, I know you said this place that you work, but what role do you play?
So at the organization, I am a trainer. So I train specifically our health center staff. So everyone from our front desk folks to medical assistants, nurses, and then our nurse practitioners on how to interact with our patients, making sure that we're staying culturally competent and that we are being super inclusive of people of all gender identities, sexual orientations, but also race, and making sure that we understand a lot of the history in sexual reproductive health and all of the coercion and oppression that has happened specifically to Black women, and making sure that we are talking to our Black female patients in a way that is respectful and acknowledges that history, and then also make sure that we do not replicate that history.
It's so, it's just so crazy to me, because I used to do a similar role when I was in Atlanta before I relocated to Los Angeles. And I don't, based on where you came in on the podcast, I'm not sure if you've gotten to an episode where I mentioned it, or if I even, I feel like I've mentioned it on an episode, but I'm not 100% sure, honestly. But when I was in Atlanta, I worked at a clinic, and so we did a lot of reproductive justice work, and I was a patient advocate. So I really kind of like worked as the liaison between patients and medical staff, and making sure that patients were centered and they kind of understood the whole process of what's going on and just that type of stuff. So it was really cool. And then I got to like train other folks on how to do that, and just kind of help improve like bedside manner and competence, a lot of the stuff that you mentioned. So that's so interesting to me, but it's very necessary work, because we have such a long, crazy history, particularly with like Black women and medical care, medical inequity. So there's a deep distrust of medical and like health services staff, which I think is completely valid. So to have people who are actually working with everyone to say, okay, let's make sure that we are competent, it's just so important.
For sure. And we could spend hours just talking about how the science of gynecology in and of itself came out of reproductive coercion and oppression, and like the invention of the speculum came out of this white supremacist just experimenting on Black women slaves. So particularly in this realm of healthcare, cultural competency and being cognizant of history and making sure that you are actively putting measures in place to make sure that we are not repeating that history is extremely important.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah, it's just something that working in that environment just totally changed my understanding. Like, I understood it from the perspective of a patient as a Black woman, but being behind the scenes on the opposite side of it, I was just like, it totally changed my perspective. But yeah, I know I could stay on it all day. So I digress. Folks already know that I be kind of off on a tangent sometimes, but I do want to circle back to you specifically in terms of your personal experience. So I know that, which I'm not going to go all into detail in terms of like your message, but something that you mentioned in your message that stood out to me was just you talking about your experience with coming out and how you were kind of like out to certain people, and you were kind of more recently out to like family and stuff like that. And something that I've mentioned on the show before is about just the whole process of like deciding to come out if you choose to, or, you know, being very selective about it, and, you know, it not being, it just being something that's very, very personal and very, yeah, unique to each person, like what that actually looks like. So what has that been like for you?
It has been quite interesting. I think before I even get into like the explanation of it, I hate the fact that in the LGBTQ community, we have to talk about coming out. The fact that we live in such a heteronormative culture that kind of creates this condition for us to have the need to come out, because it's just assumed that being heterosexual is the standard. Like, heterosexual people don't ever come out. They don't ever sit down with their parents or guardians or loved ones and like, hey, I like the opposite sex. So that undue burden.
You know, there was a commercial about that? Really? I don't know if you saw, but there was a commercial where there were like folks were like, you know, mom, I need to talk to you, and they're like, I'm straight, and she's like, oh no, oh my god, like it was so ridiculous. I have to look it up. I'll try to find it and send you the link, because it's so, it just had me cracking up, because it's so, that they don't have to do that.
Right. And I'm just like, this burden that gets pushed on, like, anyway, I just hate the concept overall. But so I think the first time that I was like out was probably in like junior high school. And it's really interesting because I never really sat down with my friends and like, hey, I like girls. I was just dating a girl. And we weren't hiding it, and we were very open about it, and it just was what it was, and no one asked us questions about it. And so my friends always knew that I had that interest. And like some of my cousins knew as well, but that was about it. And I was with that girl on and off from junior high all through high school, but then I had dated guys in between then. Once I got out of high school, I was only dating men. And so the guys that I was with, they knew that I have attraction to women and that I like women, but I hadn't been with a woman since. So I, identifying as queer is also something that's relatively new for me. I wasn't really ascribing to a sexual orientation then. I was just saying that I like women. And now more recently, I have adopted the label queer. I'm very comfortable with it. I'm very happy with it. For me, it is a identity label of resistance. And so that is why I feel very happy and like can stand proud in my queerness. But I came out recently because I'm in a relationship with a woman, and I'm extremely happy and kind of realized that this is really what I wanted for my life the entire time, is what I wanted to be with women. But I ended up internalizing a lot of misogyny and homophobia from my family, but also from society, which explains why it's taken me so long to actually be in a full-on relationship with a woman. But with one of my family members, my godmother, who I'm actually extremely close to, my cousin accidentally outed me to her. And my godmother was really cool about it. She didn't say anything in the moment. And then later on, I had a conversation with her, and I told her about my girlfriend now. And she was kind of just like, yeah, I always knew, like I knew when you were really young, and I just never said anything about it. And, you know, then you started dating guys, and I was like, well, you know, she'll say something when she's ready. So she was really cool about it, and that was a really positive experience. But then I came out to my mother, and that experience was pretty shitty. I didn't even get to use the terminology or the identity that I ascribe to. Like, I didn't get to tell her that I'm queer. I had to say it to her in a way that I felt like she would understand. And so I had to tell her, basically what I told her was like, Mom, I'm not straight. And in that conversation, I had broken up with a guy that I was with for about 3 years, and him and I were living together for a little bit. And so she was using that, my coming out, as a way to focus on that and to be like, is this why the relationship didn't work with this individual, and focus on telling me that she never liked that individual for me anyway, and that she already accepted that she wasn't going to have grandchildren. So it was just a...
Oh my gosh, that was a turn. Wow.
It was just a shit show coming out to my mother. So that was interesting.
That definitely took a turn to be like, oh, yeah, so I've just come to terms with the fact that I'm not going to, yeah, that those things are not automatic. Like, they don't automatically go together, so.
Right. They're not mutually exclusive. I could still have children if
at
I
all.
Wanted. You're not going to have grandchildren if you don't want to have children. Like.
Oh, my gosh. That's how it just shows you how ingrained, like, heteronormativity is in our society, that that's the assumption that it's like, oh, well, you know, you're not straight, so clearly, you know, these other things, I can assume these other things about you. And I'm just like, not true at all. I mean, because when I came out to one of my grandmothers, so one of my mom's mother recently passed, and when I came out to her, I mean, she was like, oh, I already knew, it's whatever. On my father's side, I'm not very close to that side of the family, but I came out to my grandmother, and she had a similar reaction. Like, she was like, well, don't you want to have kids?
Like, oh God!
I didn't think that was relevant, but what? Like, you know, that was just what she immediately went to was, and also a similar thing about, oh, well, that's why such and such didn't work out, because the relationship I was in when I came out to her, prior to that, I was with a guy, and he and I were together for like 2 years. And so she was like, oh, so is that why things didn't work out with him? And, you know, don't you want kids? And once you meet, oh, you'll meet a guy who, you know, who just makes you want to settle down and have kids. So I was just like, what? How did we get here?
Right.
Oh, that's
like,
crazy to me.
No, the relationship did not work with that person because I do not like that person. Like, it's that simple.
That's just a hot mess. So, I mean, did you have any, was there anybody else that you, well, no, something I want to circle back to. So you said that basically with your godmother, you were accidentally outed. How were you accidentally outed?
Outed. So my cousin, my godmother, and myself, we were all sitting down. We were talking one day, and my cousin had said something about my attraction to women and whether or not I had shared that with someone else I was talking to at the time. And my godmother just, her face, like, she had such a poker face. Her face didn't flinch at all. And she never brought it up to me until I circled back to that conversation with her.
Wow. I mean, I actually think that that's, I mean, her response, even with it being a poker face, like, her response was really good because basically she still left that, she didn't, you know, like, basically deny you of your autonomy or your agency. Like, she just basically left it up to you to talk to her when you wanted to talk to her, as opposed to her responding any, you know, particular type of way. So, which is very difficult for a lot of people to do because they immediately make it about themselves. So.
For sure. No, I appreciated that from her. It actually really made it helpful because then I got to have the conversation with her on my own terms. But my godmother's a little different because she has more understanding of individuals and what it means to come out in the LGBTQ community because her best friend, when she was in her teens, was a gay man, and she became super close with him. They were almost like brother and sister, and she was around while he had his partner. And so she kind of got to see what it means to be supportive and to be an ally, and she definitely demonstrated that for me in that moment.
So she was coming from a different perspective. I mean, what type of place was your mom coming from?
You know, I couldn't really tell. And to try and give her the benefit of the doubt, there was a lot that was happening at the same time. It hadn't been very long since I had moved out of her house. My mom and I, our relationship has always been a little rocky because we haven't always seen things eye to eye. And I'm very much like, this is what I want to do, or this is who I am or how I feel. And I'm quite vocal about that. And that, you know, that doesn't always sit well with her. And then I was with a partner that she didn't like prior to coming out to her. So I think there was also lingering tension from those other things that kind of just carried on into me coming out.
It's always interesting to me, like, on one hand, I'm curious about kind of the place that people are coming from when they receive the information. Like, we all kind of approach everything with our own context. You know, we all got our own stuff that's operating. But at the same time, I still feel like, you know, of course, for that person who is coming out, it's totally up to them to, ultimately it's about like their well-being, their agency, and them being able to like live their truth, whatever that looks like for them, whether it involves coming out or not. But it's just so, sometimes you'll be surprised at the types of things that run through people's minds when you give them that information. And for me too, part of coming out was like some people that I thought would be accepting were not, and some people that I thought would not be accepting were accepting. Like, it was a lot of things were unexpected about the process. It's like kind of no way to predict really how it's going to turn out. But, I mean, do you feel like that had more of an impact on you all's relationship? Because you said that it was already kind of, like, rocky.
Yeah, I definitely think it has more of an impact on our relationship. The whole reason why I came out to her in the first place is because, like I had mentioned, in a relationship with my girlfriend now, and I, for a few years now, have been, like, on this path to living my truth and, like, doing the work that it takes to be able to actually do that, and this is a relationship that I'm extremely happy in and really proud of, and I wasn't about to do all of this extra work to try and hide it. And so I wanted her, part of me coming out was like being able to give her the heads up and her to have a chance to brace herself to see me living my truth. And so I definitely think that it's affected our relationship and kind of added this extra layer of difficulty, because she came into my house once while my girlfriend was here and barely tried to sit down and have a conversation with her, barely acknowledged her. And I was like, you know, that's not acceptable. And it hurt me. And so there's been like ongoing tension there ever since that happened.
So how did you, I mean, that's such a tough position to be in when you know that, hey, this is someone that I love, that I care about, that's important to me. And, you know, my parent is engaging with them or not engaging with them in a particular way. To me, certain things are just very hard for me to wrap my mind around, even though it's like, okay, I get it, kind of like, I get it on one level, but ultimately it's very hard for me to fathom, because I'm like, okay, well, this is your child. So I don't know. I just can't really like wrap my mind around people being willing to like not accept certain things or just have certain feelings toward their child, like their flesh and blood. So I really don't understand that. How did you get to a place where you became comfortable living your truth? Like, I mean, I'm guessing, because you said you had to do the work. So what did that look like? Like, what was it? Because you said you had internalized misogyny and homophobia. I know you said misogyny. I might just.
Also homophobia.
So how did you get from there to being able to live your truth?
A lot of it is unlearning. Like, I think being able to live your truth requires unlearning all of the things that you have heard from your family, all of the things that you heard from your surroundings and society, and like all of these different like social groups and their ideas, and really finding your inner voice and listening to what that inner voice is telling you. And so it's been a process that I've been going through for a few years now, I would say about 5 years. And it just started where things weren't feeling right for me. And I was starting to question a lot of the things that people around me were believing, or that things that I was made to believe as the truth while I was growing up, and started to really feel like, as I started to shed that, really started to feel like I was coming in line with who I truly am. Like, as it relates to my sexuality, for example, I have always been attracted to women. I think the first time I looked at a girl and was super attracted, I was super young. I was probably like 5 or 6, and I was like, wow, she's really pretty. And even being with men and having sex with men, like, I had to think about women in order to try and even achieve an orgasm. So that desire had always been there. And I was actually thinking about this the other day after I had sent you the message. I remember I was about 16 years old, and I was in therapy at the time for a bunch of things that had happened in my teen years, like traumas and stuff like that. And my relationship with the girl I was with in high school came up, and my therapist had asked me, you know, do you see yourself being in a long-term committed relationship with a woman? And I was like, no, I can't see that.
Mm.
And she kept probing into why, and I couldn't answer the questions. All I kept saying was like, I just can't see it. And the reason why I couldn't see it is because I was made to believe that I couldn't have that. That wasn't for me. That being with a guy was for me. And not to say that I would be with a guy and like get married and have kids, because I never wanted kids. I was never into marriage. I was more like, well, I'm just going to go around dating a bunch of different guys, right? And even that, like having peeled back the layers of it, is like, Well, the reason you felt like that is because you don't actually connect with men. Like, they're not who you actually want to be with. So, just learning a lot about myself and, like, leaning into the truth and leaning into those places where I'm like, okay, I'm bumping up against something, but I can't really find a true answer for it. So is this something that I feel, or is this something that I've been conditioned to feel or conditioned to think?
No, that's real. I'm just like, it's crazy to me, like, how there can be certain things that we actually know about ourselves, but there can be so much conditioning and so many like other messages that we've gotten that we bury it. Like, I tried to be, you know, with the guy, and I mean, I liked him. I mean, I loved him. I mean, I do feel like I genuinely loved him, but over the course of our relationship, I mean, I recognized that I wanted to be with a woman, like, every day, every single day. I'm like, you know, hey, he's cool. Like, I think to this day, I mean, you know, we don't have any, like, animosity or anything. And I do feel like, you know, we had a genuine connection and that kind of thing, but I just could not envision my life with a man the way that I could with a woman. Even when I was little, when I thought about, like, growing up, I always thought about, like, my partner or whatever being another, like, girl or something like that. Like, I just didn't see myself having, like, a husband or I don't know. It was very strange to me. I mean, did you have any examples or anything of, like, queer couples, queer relationships, anything like that when you were growing up?
Not really. And I think that's also what makes it hard, right? Like, representation is so important. In my, like, community, like, my spiritual community, there were gay men, but even they weren't in, like, established partnerships. Like, they had multiple partners over the course of years. It wasn't like they were in a long-term committed relationship. So there was really no example that I look at and be like, oh, that's something that I can aspire to. That is something that I can have for myself.
Yeah, it's, you know, when I look back on childhood and stuff like that, that's something that always comes to mind. I'm like, we didn't really have any examples. Like, all the examples of couples, even when I think about, like, Black couples that I found inspiring or just whatever, when I think about what was portrayed, there were no queer couples, relationships, or whatever. So I didn't have that to look to as an example of a possibility. I didn't, like, I was just like, you know, I thought that there were things I had to do differently in order for it to be a possibility. Like, when I was little, I wanted to be a little boy because I was like, the only way I can be with a girl is if I'm a boy. I mean, that was my childish logic, but I didn't see how it could be a possibility outside of that. And when I got older and when I did have a boyfriend, I was just like, well, I know I want to be with a woman, but I felt like I needed to try to be with a man. I don't know. It's like, we don't really get those images and those messages to affirm that queerness and, like, queer love and relationships are a viable option. So that's really, we're starting to see it a little bit, but even still, it's very much lacking. And so I want for, you know, those kids who are coming up now to be able to see that. We need that representation because they need to know that it is a possibility that, you know, heterosexuality is not your only option, and that's not the only way you can have a loving, romantic relationship.
Absolutely. And, like, even now, like, finding representation it takes work. Like, it's not easy. There's a lot of, like, searching and digging that has to go into it. And this is a conversation that my girlfriend and I have had. We are both very femme presenting. Like, we both carry very, like, masculine energy, but we present very femme. And, you know, when we were, like, looking for representation and, like, pictures, it was always, like, a femme woman with a more, like, masculine presenting woman or, like, an androgynous presenting woman. And it was so hard. And even now I find it still kind of challenging to find two Black femme presenting women as representation.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times if you do happen to, well, even when you do see the representation, a lot of times it's like interracial. there's like always some type of catch, you know, either it's going to be, you know, a femme, someone who's more femme presenting and someone who's more masculine centered, or it's going to be, oh, if they're both femme presenting, they're going to, it's going to be interracial or whatever. And what you talked about in terms of having to search, I mean, it's like now there's more, like a few more options, but the accessibility is still so limited, you know, that you have to go above and beyond just to find anything. And that's definitely not the case when it comes to straight representation. You know, you see it everywhere. You don't have to, even when you don't want to see it, like, you're going to see it everywhere because it's the, it's what's considered the norm. So it, you know, just kind of seeing that change would be so, where it's more accessible, where queer relationships, queer love, especially queer people of color, especially Black queer people, where that becomes more accessible, where you don't have to do this deep dive just to find something. And then when you do find something, it's still lacking.
Right. And that's something that for me is really important to, like, any queer Black girl that's out there, particularly if she's really young. I want her to be able to find people who look like her, people who have the types of relationships that she desires to have without having to go through all of these extra steps to find it. That to me is like my dream.
How have you navigated being in a relationship as someone who is femme presenting with someone else who is femme presenting? Because there's a lot of stuff that comes with that. I mean, my wife is not primarily femme presenting, but I am primarily femme presenting, and I've been with women who are femme women, and that's like its own thing. Like, just kind of moving through the world that way. So what has that been like for you?
It's been interesting. I mean, even just like an hour ago, we stopped at the liquor store before we came home, and we were making a joke with the woman behind the counter. We were just joking around, like making conversation with her, and she asked if we were related, and I'm like, no.
Oh, gosh. I hate it.
Yeah. I'm just like, the heteronormativity, the assumption automatically is either they're best friends or they're related to each other.
Mm-hmm.
But there, no one.
It can't be romantic, though.
It can't be romantic, right? And it's like, exactly. And then walking down the street for me is like a big thing, and like men staring and like catcalling. And whereas, and I've only seen it from the outside, I've never experienced it for myself, because even in high school, when I was with her, she was that woman was femme presenting at the time as well. But I've seen where if one of them is more masculine presenting, then there is kind of an assumption that they're together. And so the comments that are made are different. They're still shitty, but they're different. Whereas I feel like we're both getting hit on at the same time. And I'm just like, no, you can't have either one of us.
It's so weird because, like, I mean, my wife is masculine of center, but she's not, I wouldn't say she's like super butch or anything, but it trips me out because we get like a combination. Like, we get the, you know, oh, you must be related thing. Like, we were at the grocery store and we're just like cracking up, laughing and stuff like that. And, so this lady was in line in front of us, and so she turns around and she's like, oh, you must be sisters, because of how we're interacting, because we're just laughing and joking. I'm just like, now mind you, I don't think we look anything alike. I just don't see it at all, but we have gotten that more than one time.
Oh,
are you related? And it's a microaggression is really what it is, because I'm like,
sure.
No, my sister, my friend, like, I have a whole ass wife, we got rings on, like, no. But we get both. We get that type of reaction and the catcalling and the hit, being hit on, or people making comments. But we also get the, since she is a little more masculine center, like, you know, that type of response too. And it's, I don't know, folks are gross.
They are. And it's just, I don't know. It's, it's definitely interesting. And then I'm also hyper aware of people's facial expressions and like body language. And so I've seen people who, like, let's say Uber drivers, for example. I think that's a perfect example. Like, if we're Ubering somewhere on a night out, and we're in the back seat and we're conversing, like, they see us, and the look in their head is they've made the assumption that we're either just best friends or that we're related, right? And mm-hmm. then through our conversation and hearing us talk to each other and call each other babe and, like, oh, what are we going to do when we go home tonight? And, like, all of this stuff. You can see how their facial expression changes when they're...
Like, clearly, like, we're a damn couple.
Together. Right. And I'm just like, oh, God. I can't.
But, you know, that's, like, a whole other thing because it really, for me, sometimes it can bring some anxiety because it becomes a safety thing. Like, I don't know what people's attitudes are and what people's beliefs are. So it makes me nervous. Like, if I'm by myself, like I've said on the show before, in certain situations, I'm not out. I'm not out at work. I'm not, like, closeted per se, but I just don't really say anything. I mean, I wear a ring and I make it clear that I'm married, but I just don't talk about my wife. But when we're out and about, if we have to get in an Uber or if we're going to a restaurant and getting service, wherever, just us existing in the world together, I don't know what baggage and what biases and whatever prejudices people are coming or, like, engaging with us with. So I'm always kind of, like, a little nervous because it is a safety thing to me. I'm like, I don't know how this person is going to respond to us. You know, we do not, to me, I don't feel like we interact like we're the homie. Like, I mean,
right.
I just don't think so. So I'm just like, I don't know. It just, yeah, it definitely makes me nervous.
Yeah, I've heard you say it on the show a couple of times, and it actually really resonated with me because my girlfriend and I are planning our first trip together, and, like, we're going outside of the country, and I actually found myself Googling, like, whether or not same-sex marriage is legal in that country and just trying to get a feel for, like, how people in that country react to LGBTQ folks and having that in the back of my mind and then knowing that, like, all of these different, operating with a very, like, intersectional mindset of, like, all of these different identities that are marginalized are coming together. Like, we're traveling, we're women, we are Black women, we are queer Black women, and what does that mean for our safety?
It's so crazy to me that that's the things that we have to consider just with planning a trip. I mean, we've done the same thing where we're like Googling, trying to figure out, okay, you know, what's the landscape looking like in this place? We went through that when we were trying to plan a destination wedding and we knew we wanted to do it in Mexico. And we're like, okay, are we going to be able to do this? And are we going to get treated some kind of way? And I mean, luckily it was beautiful. I mean, our planner was amazing. Like, we didn't have any issues, but We didn't know. We were very nervous and we didn't know. And we'd had issues trying to actually decide on a resort because, you know, some places were open to it and some were not. So it's crazy that, you know, things people take for granted, we have to take extra considerations, you know, before actually making that decision.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, just that extra step, that extra research that we have to do just to live our lives the way that we want to and to be true to ourselves. It's crazy.
Yeah, it really is.
And I would really like to see a society where we don't have to do all of that extra work. We don't have to operate with all of that extra anxiety. And I don't know that we'll be able to get there in my lifetime, but I hope we get there.
I really hope so. I mean, it's a dream. And I try not to get too, I guess pessimistic or jaded. I mean, I try to keep some hope alive, but, I really hope that changes because it's just not fair. And I want for those folks who are coming up, you know, after me to not have to experience the same things that we've had to go through.
For sure. And every time that I turn around and I hear of someone who is LGBTQ and Black and died by suicide because they were not affirmed or because they were made fun of for their sexual orientation, my heart shattered. And I've had a friend who died by suicide, and we know that she struggled with, you know, mental health issues, but there was also some speculation of whether or not she was struggling with her sexual orientation. And to have that doubt that that could have been a contributing factor is really hard for me to sit with, to know that she may have been in an environment that was so against her and so oppressive of her that she couldn't even start the process of discovering her sexual orientation. It's just so heartbreaking.
It really is. And it's unfair. Like, it's very unfair that, you know, folks just existing. It's like you're literally existing and you feel like, oh, well, me existing is not safe, or it's not affirmed, it's not validated. It's, you know, seen as something that is othered. It's seen as something that is abnormal. It's just such a fucked up reality. And, you know, it's like that, it's very dehumanizing, and folks don't deserve to live that way. So I'm hoping, I mean, that was part of the whole point of me wanting to have this podcast, is that, you know, we need things that center us. Like, we are not some abnormalities. Like, we're not like, it's not like we're uncommon. We are here. We exist. So, you know, for us to be framed to be other or to be, you know, abnormal is so ridiculous to me, because queer people have existed forever. Like, we've always been here. It's not a new thing.
Right. Yeah. We've always been here. Whether or not you've been able to see us is a totally different story, but we've always been here. There's proof of our existence. And one of the things that I had said in the message to you was that part of why the podcast is so special to me and why I'm so drawn to it is because it's kind of been a safe space for me. Every episode, there's a conversation that I'm like, yeah, I experienced that, or I relate to that. That resonates with me. I feel affirmed and validated, and like, hearing these stories, I'm like, yeah, I'm not the only one. Like, I'm not losing my shit. This is a real thing that we have to deal with and navigate.
Yeah. I mean, it breaks my heart to know that people are feeling alone, you know, because we're definitely not. Like, there's so many of us out here. So it just really is, it's important that we continue to like center each other, share each other's stories and stuff like that, because we can let other folks know that we are here. You don't have to feel like you're just going through something alone, because that isolation can be so detrimental. It can, you know, it causes a lot of people to feel like they don't really have any other alternative because they feel so incredibly isolated. And I know how that can be, but I really, you know, want to try to combat that, because it's, you know, it doesn't have to be that way. It's sad that that's how things have been set up. You know, we've been ostracized, so we feel very isolated, but you know, we can take care of one another and uplift one another and not have to just accept that as our reality.
Absolutely. And it makes me think of, in one of the episodes, you and the guests were talking about cultivating the space around you. And while I understand that it is a privilege to be able to do that to a certain extent, on social media, I think it is so important to cultivate that space for yourself, particularly as a queer person, as a Black queer person, as a Black queer woman, to make sure that you are surrounding yourself with people who are like you and are affirming of your existence and have shared experience and can provide that representation for you, and shutting out the people who want to other you and silence you and ostracize you, I think can be really useful. And it's something that I have done. Everybody that I follow on social media is either a friend of mine or it's someone who is doing some type of work that is important and that is supporting my community in one way or another.
I think you're absolutely right. We do have kind of this unique opportunity to be able to curate our social media spaces. And at the very least, even if we don't have control over our like geographical location, you know, or, mm-hmm. you know, that type of thing, we do have control over our social media, environment, basically our neighborhood and who we choose to connect ourselves to. So I think that, it's so important that we're able to see ourselves reflected in that. It's a different time from when I was younger, that I've gotten to see that happen in my lifetime, going from where, you know, if it wasn't kind of in person, then you really didn't have much going on, to seeing the opportunities that technology has allowed us. I mean, it has this, you know, other side to it too, but, in terms of community, creating this community, I think it's a great tool that we can use. So, I think that's really, really important. Before I wrap up, I wanted to see if there's anything else that you want to share with listeners, if there's any way they can, like if you have anything going on that you want to share, if they want to be all up in your business, how can they follow you, that type of stuff.
Yeah. Well, if you want to be all up in my business, you can be on my Instagram account. It's the word O_it_Ray. As I said at the beginning, like in my introduction, I do write occasionally. I do share it on my Instagram. So if you're interested in checking out some poetry or prose or anything like that, I upload that there. I have some projects that I am working on, so you can stay up to date with that there as well.
Whoop, whoop. So go be all up in Ray's business, follow on Instagram. I'll make sure that I include her Instagram information too in the show notes. I'm glad that you decided to join me on a show. And it was kind of last minute, y'all, because Ray hit me up and I was like, hey, so, and she was down and responded to me quickly despite it being kind of last minute. But it's always exciting to me to get those messages because I'm like, hey, I want to hear your voice. I want to hear, you know, for you to be able to share with the folks what you have going on. So that's exciting to me. So I really appreciate you coming on. And I guess that's it for now. So thank you all for tuning in. I appreciate it. And until next time, that's it. That's all I got for y'all today.
Thank you for having me.
Black Radical Queer Podcast is all about intersectionality and Black queer folks sharing our stories on our own terms. We navigate an array of identities, and BRQ is an outlet where we can see the spectrum of those identities reflected, explored, and celebrated. Black Radical Queer is a Main Hustle Media podcast hosted by Javia Nicole, produced and edited by Charmaine Johnson. Music is by Publicity. You can find us on social media by looking up Black Rad Queer. It's BLKRADQWR. We are on Facebook as well as Instagram and Twitter. Same handle regardless, at Black Rad Queer. BLKRADQWR. We also have a Facebook discussion group that's just called BRQ Discussion Group. And you can also listen wherever you get your podcasts. So we're on iTunes, we're on Spotify, Google Play, you know, all those types of things. And we have, you know, our home base that's on Libsyn. So you can listen on there as well. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode. Make sure you come on back around next week to see what we have for you. And all right, y'all, I'm out.
Main Hustle Media. Turn your side hustle into your main hustle.